Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks Sunday, January 14th, 2018. This is episode 1454. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com/techguy to save 20% off any order. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz, augmented reality, CES, 88 Bitcoin, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can reach us via Skype from other areas, so don't worry about that. It's toll free for everyone in the world if you use Skype. 888-827-5536. Chat room, irc.twit.tv. You can go there in a browser. Or if you're one of them old-timers, you have a IRC client lying around, you can use that too. irc.twit.tv. And the most important thing to remember is the website, techguylabs.com. I don't make any money on it. It's free. It's not there's no pay site. We don't make you sign up or anything. It's just that's where everything that happens on the show ends up, including audio and video of the show, but also, answers to all the questions, and your comments are more than welcome there as well. No need to shout at the radio for this show. I mean, you can. I'm not discouraging you, but you have another place you can shout. TechGuyLabs.com. You'd think I'd be talking. I'm going to talk about the most important story of the day, and it's not Spectre and Meltdown. It's not Bitcoin or Ripple or Ethereum or Dogecoin. It's not CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. It's Facebook in the news this week. I want a poll, a little poll here, a survey question. How many of you think that Facebook is a place for you to stay in touch with family and friends, to connect with old friends like high school classmates, to keep up on what Aunt Maud is doing and Uncle Joey and that kind of thing, you know, see the grandkids? How many of you think that's what Facebook's for? See, that's not apparently what Facebook's for, or wasn't anyway. See, I thought that's what Facebook was all about, too, connection with your family and friends. No, it turns out, and by the way, big story in BuzzFeed today that this shift happened about 5 years ago because of Twitter. Facebook decided to put more news in the news feed, more stories from news publications and things like that. Really, Facebook's very simple. Whatever Mark Zuckerberg, its founder, says, really, Facebook is simple. It's the idea is to have a site that has a lot of content on it that's engaging. That's the key metric for Facebook, how engaged you are. In other words, how addicted you are. How many times a day you visit Facebook and how long you stay when you do. The bigger those numbers, the happier Facebook is, because they make money showing you ads. And the more you're there and the longer you're there, the more ads you'll see and the more those ads are worth. And it's a very happy coincidence that unlike other sites that have ads, Facebook, by its very nature, collects information about you. And that makes it even better for advertisers. Advertisers are always looking for a way to reach specific groups, age groups, education level, income, location, all of those things. Even like religious and political affiliations, all of those things are helpful. In fact, Facebook's gotten so good at that, it can not only do that, it can also tell people, I'm kid you not, what kind of mood you're in. And you might say, well, yeah, those status updates, they always ask you what kind of mood you're in. But it's not that simple. They can just tell by what you look at and what you write. They can tell what mood you're in. They could tell what type of person you are. They have all sorts of data about you, data you may not even have given them, but they've just figured out by your use of the site. And that makes it super valuable for advertisers. It's probably off. You know, I'll admit it. I don't like it because I make my living on radio and in podcasts. All my income comes from advertising. And I'd like to say that, you know, those podcast ads, those radio ads make, you know, are the best possible thing advertisers can buy. But I'll be honest with you, given what Facebook knows about its audience, given its reach of more than, is it 2 billion people now? Wow. And it's probably the, you know, most efficient ad buy you can make, right? It's not as good for other reasons, but I mean, but it's you know, it's not in some ways because it's easy to ignore ads on Facebook. And I bet, in fact, that you probably don't remember the last ad you saw on Facebook. It's kind of more of a subliminal thing, right? And that's why they don't charge as much as a podcast or radio show charges. Nevertheless. So about 5 years ago, in an effort to make it more sticky, more addictive, more engaging. Thank you. Please use the word engaging. Okay, thank you. We find it a much better word than addictive. Okay, thank you. More engaging. They decided to put more news in the feed. It backfired a little bit. I don't think it hurt the news feed particularly, although I just saw a study that said engagement, the amount of time people spend on the site, actually has been declining for the last 2 years. Has been going down. And I don't know about you, but I think this is the case because I notice it and I talk to my tech friends about it, that Facebook, you know, sometimes is better than other times. Like sometimes you'll say, boy, Facebook's been really great these days. Really enjoy the content. And then sometimes, boy, I can't take it anymore. Facebook's so depressing. You ever say that? I think so. And that's because they are constantly twiddling the program that decides what you see. They have knobs and dials in effect, and they're always twiddling those, trying to improve engagement. Well, this week, Mark Zuckerberg, and this is the story I'm getting to. This is the big story. Mark Zuckerberg this week said, you know what? Facebook's going to be more about your friends and family. Wait a minute. Isn't that why you joined Facebook? No one, I don't think anybody joins Facebook to see news, right? And yet, of the people who use Facebook, almost a majority, not quite, say this is their only news source. I think it was something like 40-some% say, I get my news from Facebook. So while you may not have joined Facebook because of the news, it ends up having that effect. This is devastating to publishers. A lot of publishers, newspapers, magazines, even TV channels, we're all in on Facebook. This is great for us. We're going to generate so much traffic. This is fabulous. And you probably noticed for a while there were a lot of videos in your feed. People figured out the best way to do a Facebook video because Facebook's changed how video works, right? At first, it just was a link. Then it started playing the video, but there was no audio. Now I think they play video and audio, but for a long time, Facebook just played the video with no audio. So people said, oh, I know what we'll do. Put big letters on our video so people will be reading it and stick with it even if they're not listening. So Facebook really conditioned a lot of news organizations to a certain kind of behavior because this is how you drive traffic, and it was very effective. Well, they've turned off that tap for now. If there's anything we've learned is that Facebook changes constantly. What's your experience? Do you like it? Do you use it? For my New Year resolution, I took Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Google+ off my smartphone, off my portables. Still on my desktop. If I want to go, I can look at it on my computer. But I found I was really, maybe you noticed this, really engaged with my phone an awful lot. If you're younger, you might want to add Snapchat to it, maybe WhatsApp. One of the messaging programs. Interesting that Facebook owns Instagram and WhatsApp, right? They don't want you ever not to be looking at a Facebook product. I feel better. Don't you feel better? Have you done that? Did it make you feel? I think it's a good New Year resolution. Try it just for a week. You'll jones at first, right? The first day or two, because it is addictive. That's engaging, Leo. I'm sorry. It is engaging. For the first couple of days, you go, you'll start shaking. I need my Facebook. But pretty soon, the sun comes out. The flowers bloom, the birds sing, life is sweet without Facebook. Sorry, Mark. What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There you go. Hoosier News Hound says, I broadcast as many press conferences on Facebook as we do on the TV. See? That's exactly right. But that's going to change now. You're not going to get those links anymore. You're not going to get that traffic anymore from Facebook. So let's see. I got Heather Hammond's post. My mom shared a fascinating discovery. We knew we were warriors, and science proves it. All right. Then I got something from a group I follow. Another thing from a group I follow. Another thing from a company I like. Then a friend, Dave Weiner, says, I'm not watching football. And then another group I follow. And then another group I follow. And then a friend, a colleague. Then a group I follow. Okay, I'm going to have to unfollow some of these groups and companies. Because now they're dominating. Yeah. And, you know, they're political groups. So, of course, I'm getting a lot of political news I don't want. So let me unfollow those. How do you get out of there? Joined. Unjoin. Unfollow. How about leave group? There you go. If you leave the group, yeah, I'm just going to leave it. Okay, now I've left the group. All right, let's go. Let's follow another. Let's see what else I can unfollow here. Okay, it's Heather Hammond, Dave Weiner, Tim Stevens, Dave Williams. This is good. Now it's just friends. You can learn to play the banjo. Yeah, this is good. That changed it. Completely changed it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Michael Cozio's spinning the disc. It's cozy in here. Kim Schaffer's back from her trip to Ireland. We missed you, Kim. Thank you for coming back.
Missed you too.
No, you didn't. You said that. You tried to say it. You did. You really did, and I appreciate the thought. But you couldn't.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, you want to. You want to stay in Ireland.
I did. Know. Yeah. Well, I mean, at least a little longer. I would have liked to have seen way more of the country.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
The wedding we went to ended up lasting about 5 days, so it took up a big chunk of time.
Now let me ask you: So the Irish accent is adorable. I love it.
It's so.
Do
sexy.
They like our accent the same
they
way?
They do. They do, and they try to mimic us too. It's very.
And they
funny.
Talk like this. Yeah, when they do.
Well,
it.
No. So we met these little kids, and they were like, "Surf's up, dude."
Sure,
like,
for
yeah,
sure,
we all
dude.
Sound like that.
Yeah, the surf's up. Oh, you're so cute. I love that accent. Oh, it's just talk some more to me.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I don't know. Yeah.
I just stood at the bar and talked to the bartender so I could hear their...
So that's the real question I'm asking to the boys. The boys go, ooh, I like your accent. It's very cute. Well, I like yours, too.
Well, none of that happened.
Yeah. I wish I had a better Irish accent because it's a sweet accent. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they have... I mean, some people's is so thick that I couldn't even understand what they were saying. And then they have that whole other Irish language that doesn't resemble anything.
Is it Gaelic? Celtic?
I think it's Gaelic, but I think they call it Irish.
Irish. Well, of course they do.
Yeah.
We call it American, even though it's English.
Yeah.
So... Well, welcome back. I missed you, but I have to say, you've clearly been slaving and working hard on the phone because we've got a full board of people.
I actually called back a lady that was left over from yesterday.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, so we'll start with Kim in Riverside.
Start with him?
Kim.
Her?
Kim.
Thank you, Kim. Yes. Hello, Kim. Leo Laporte, the tech
Leo.
Guy. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sorry we couldn't get to you yesterday, but I appreciate your
That's okay.
Coming back.
Yeah. I almost forgot this morning, and she called me back, so I'm grateful for that.
That's nice. Well, anyway, I hope I can help you. What can I do for you?
Well, my friend gave me a computer, a really nice one. It was very expensive, and what's happening now is I've tried to disconnect everything on the computer that belonged to him, but... The other day I got an error message on when it was downloading an update. It had an error that it couldn't download the whatever an update it was. Mm-hmm. And when I clicked on the message, it took me to the login page, you know, where you log into Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps referring to him. And
You can't change it to your Microsoft account?
Yeah, I keep trying to change it to mine, and I don't. I even hired somebody to do it. And then the next time I had to log back in on the computer, it gave me his
Do you
email
use, when you log into the computer, your Microsoft account or just a local login and password? Do you know?
Well, it just asked me for a PIN number, and actually it's his PIN number.
Ah, okay, good. So you're still using his account. That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're gonna have to change that. You don't want it. There's no reason to not use your account. Do you have a Microsoft account?
Yes, I do, and I just would like to take that off of it because I can't even download those updates now because it's tied to him.
Yeah. So this is a good piece of advice because we get this call a lot for anybody donating a computer to somebody else. Clear it off. Because otherwise you're going to have this problem. You could do this yourself, by the way. Here's the problem. Are there programs on there that you want to keep that he had on there? Like Microsoft Office, things
no.
like that?
No. No, because I have Microsoft Office.
Good. Yeah, sometimes people do.
Let me log in on, yeah.
Yeah, okay, sometimes people do that. You know, don't erase it because they say, well, but it's all set up just great. You know, but the problem is it's all set up for him just great. So I think really it is time to take advantage of Microsoft has excellent. And this is Windows 10, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So Microsoft has excellent kind of reset options in Windows 10. The good news is you've already, because that computer's running Windows 10, you might remember the dim, dark days when you had to have a serial number and all that stuff. You don't need that anymore.
Right.
So what you want to do at this point is what they call reset this PC.
Okay.
And the easy way to get to it is hit the Windows key, you know, that key with the Windows logo on it.
Right.
Uh-huh. And type recovery. And then you'll hit return when you see recovery options. That'll take you right to the recovery options control panel.
Okay.
And then you'll see there's a number of different recovery options. Is there anything on there that you need to keep?
Yeah, there are files on there. I have a drive that I could.
Yeah, I would. I would drive, before you do this, just copy those files over to that drive.
Okay.
And then reset the PC. Now, well, and by the way, it gives you two options. It says you can keep your files or you can start over. And in this case, I think if you keep files, you'll keep his account.
Okay.
So I think what you really want to do is to start over, erase, basically.
Okay.
You're going to reset the PC. And it's almost certain that the way modern Windows 10 computers are configured, there's a hidden part of the hard drive, we call it a partition, that contains the Windows installer. So you don't need a disk, you don't need a serial number, you don't need anything. You should be able just to reinstall it, and it'll say, do you want to keep your files? And you say no. And what'll happen then is it'll go back to the way it was when he bought it.
Okay.
Which is what you want. And because
Perfect.
It then
yeah.
goes through the setup where it says, okay, what's your Microsoft account? Or would you like to create one? And do all that. From now on, it's yours. It's all yours. And that's really the best way to do it. It's erasing anything that he left on there. It's starting fresh. You will have to go through the Windows update process. But this is important now because of these, you know, Spectre and Meltdown flaws. It's a good thing to do anyway.
Right. Okay.
So this is the time to do it. If it doesn't, for some reason, have a recovery partition, Then it'll say, well, you need to get Windows Media, and then you can go back to your Windows 10 login and download from Microsoft. They call it the Media Creation Tool. It'll actually, you need a USB key of 8 gigs or more, and you can put that in there, and you can put Windows on it. That's not a bad thing to do anyway. But you probably won't do it. Is it a Dell? Who made the computer?
It's an HP.
HP. Yeah, the HP has mm-hmm. that recovery partition on there. So you don't have to
worry. Okay.
And the nice thing is it'll be an HP recovery partition. So it'll have all the HP stuff. You'll be, it's like you're getting a brand new computer, which is what you want.
Okay.
You know, this is going to take the rest of the afternoon, probably.
Oh, yeah.
So don't.
So any programs I've put on there, I'll have to reload them?
Yes, like yeah. Office and so yeah. forth. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Perfect.
I think this is
Thank
the best
you
way.
Much.
You're welcome. I think.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, you should. And anybody who's donating a computer, don't forget to do this. You know, you might think, oh, I'm doing the person a favor because there's stuff on here that she might want or whatever. But you're not really. You can see it causes confusion. You really just want to go in there and reset. You can do it before you give it away. Reset this PC, erase all your files, and then she'll get a nice fresh computer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Choose an option. Continue. Use a device. Troubleshoot. You want to go to troubleshoot then. Okay. Reset this PC. So that's a little... Thank you, Microsoft, for making this option confusing. So when you go to the reset your PC, it'll say continue, which actually just puts you back in Windows, which is not... I don't think that's what you're looking for. It just rebooted, I think. What you want to do is troubleshoot, and then you'll get a reset your PC option, and you can decide whether to keep your files or not. I fear if you keep the files... Actually, the files aren't associated with his account, are they? Let me log in here. Yeah, see, it just rebooted back to the screen. So Windows key, recovery, options... Reset this PC is what you want. And if you can also do learn how to start fresh. Start fresh with a clean and up-to-date installation. Oh, okay. This will keep your personal files in some Windows settings and remove most of your apps, including Office, third-party antivirus. I actually don't think you want to do that either. I think you want to go. Let's go back to... reset this PC. Reinstalls Windows. I think this is really what you want. Oh, and this time it did it right. Keep my files or remove everything. And you're going to select remove everything. Just remove my files, remove files, and clean the drive. You don't need to clean the drive. Although, note, it says use this if you're recycling the PC. So the guy who gave it to you should have done this just because but that takes a long time. But that would then erase all his files so that they couldn't be recovered. In your case, you're just going to say, just remove my files. Use this if you're keeping the PC. Now, I'm hoping it's going to ask me one more time, yeah. So resetting will remove all personal files and user accounts. That's the key right there, user accounts. All apps and programs, any changes made to settings, this will take a while and your PC will restart. And at that point, it'll be just like you got it fresh from the factory, and then you'll go through the HP login and setup procedure. If you don't have a Microsoft account, this is a good time to make one. You do, though, because you have Office, right? So, yeah. If you didn't trust the person who gave you the computer, then you would want to wipe the drive. Yeah, I don't know, Archandra. It will have his ownership, won't it? Yeah, I wonder... She's going to call back tomorrow or Saturday and say, now I can't open my old files. I wonder if he owns them now. Now we return to the phones and line one. Frank is in Lando Lakes, Florida. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Welcome.
Good. I had a question, see if maybe you can give me some guidance. I got a PC that won't boot. I've gone through everything, and it seems like it's either the motherboard or the CPU itself that's having the issue. Is there any way to try and narrow it down? I'd hate to buy one and then find it was the other one that was actually bad.
So what happens when you boot it?
It starts the boot cycle, about 2 seconds, resets. And just is in a loop where it'll start up 2 seconds.
And reset. It gets through the what we call the power on self tester post. You don't
no it doesn't go there at all.
You don't get anything on the screen.
Nothing. It doesn't get to that point.
Do you get any beeps?
Nope. That doesn't do it long enough.
That's interesting. I think you are actually getting through power on self-test, but I'm not sure. So, because if you can't do the post, you'll get some. If you do the post and it doesn't and it fails, or you can't get the post, you should get some beeps. So you're turning it on. Do the fans come on?
The CPU fan comes on, and when I say for 2 seconds, that may actually be too long.
Oh, okay. It's really quick. So you push the button, fan goes, and then it just goes, boop, and it keeps
and then stops
and keeps
then,
trying. And
it, yep,
keeps trying.
So I've eliminated the power supply as a problem.
You have replaced the power supply.
I've actually taken it to another PC and plugged it into that PC that works and tried it. And
when you say power supply, you mean the is it a laptop or a desktop?
Desktop.
Okay.
The tower.
You're not taking the power supply out of the tower and putting in another computer.
I did that.
You did? Wow. You unscrewed it and everything and put it in a different case?
Yep.
Oh, all right.
Make sure that it wasn't the power supply. I tried the RAM without the RAM in there. Maybe it was bad chips. I actually put those in the other computer because I have two that are identical motherboards.
Yeah. It does sound like the motherboard, but I understand your question is, well, could I just replace the CPU and not replace the motherboard?
I mean, I'd be happy to replace the motherboard, but then if I find out it was a CPU, then I'm in for, is it worth the money?
Yeah, no, I understand. Let me think about this. I would have said immediately power supply. So you did the right thing by checking that. Can you take the CPU out of the second machine and put it in your?
That's the next step. That it's like that's about the only thing that's left, and I was hesitant to do it because I'd hate to do something and then wind up screwing the other computer up.
Yeah.
But
the other thing that I think is important is it might not be something as expensive as the processor or motherboard. Those are literally the two most expensive parts in your computer. It might be some cheap power thing, and that's I'm kind of interested in that issue. You swapping the power supply was a good idea, but it might not be enough to diagnose a bad power connection on the motherboard or. You didn't overheat it or anything like that, did you? I mean, it's much more likely that the logic board, the motherboard, which is is very complex, it's much more likely that it failed than the CPU.
I built two that were practically identical. The only difference was that the one that went bad had an i5 series chip, and the other one that I use all the time has an i7. Yeah. But the funny thing is that where I was planning on putting it, I measured the height so it would fit in there, but I didn't measure the depth of the cabinet so it wouldn't fit. So I wound up not putting it there, and I don't think I've used that maybe once a month just to turn it on, see it still works, make it do the updates, from Windows and a couple
So nothing,
of times,
you haven't done any tinkering since it stopped, when it stopped booting. There was no action on your part that was connected to that. It had been fine for some time.
It just stopped working when I went to turn it on so that I wanted to do the latest updates. It's probably been 2 months, so it's okay, time to get the update.
Well, there's some serious updates right now, so it's a good idea to do that. I do think that it conceivably is something simple and easy, and I hate for you to go out and buy an expensive part, whether it's CPU or logic board, until we try all those things. You don't have any USB devices connected to it, do you?
No,
just the mouse and keyboard.
As part of the thing, before I got to that point, I had disconnected the hard drives to make sure, and the CD-ROM, just in case the CPU was providing enough power to start the process. But when the drive started spinning, it was too much of a drain. So it says, "Well, let me get that out of there."
Did you try starting it when the memory was pulled?
Yep.
And what happened then?
Exact same.
Exact same thing? Okay.
Yep.
I checked
the memory, and that one was one of the first steps. I took the chips out, the modules, and put them in the other computer to see if it would work.
And they worked fine. Yeah.
So when they didn't, that's when I called the vendor and said, hey, you know, these are warrantied. Then, you know, went through the story of what I did. So they sent me two new ones, plugged them in, and it still wouldn't reboot. So I'm thinking there's multiple issues here.
Well, yeah, maybe. Did you build this yourself or is it?
Yes.
Yeah. And by the way, here's a little something, kids, just to think about. When you build your own computer, then there's no one to call. When this happens, it's you, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's a great way to learn. It still sounds like it's the logic board. It could be the CPU. The fact that it doesn't even give you postcodes when you have no RAM in it means it is. You're absolutely right. It's not getting to the power on self test. It's smoked somehow. I still think it could be power. It could be not enough power getting to the logic board. It could be something else is shorting it. I've had this happen with a bad USB device. That's why I asked you to pull all the USB devices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have any cards in there in the slots that you could take out?
No. Nothing there. I mean, the next
you should
two
see,
things,
you
other,
should
other see than the, cannibalizing it for parts,
right.
is to... take the power supply out of the PC that does work.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do that. Yeah.
And reverse it, but I'm like, well, if the one worked, well, you know, it's
there's so many fun suggestions from the chat room. They're just eating this up. You know, this is where you get a bunch of geeks together and it's like going down to the general store and you go down to the pickle barrel there and there's four guys sitting there and you ask them a question, you know, what's the best wrench for fixing my sink? And you could go for all day with the conversation. Yeah. And it's kind of like that right now. One thought that might be a quick and easy thing to check is make sure your BIOS didn't get corrupted, that you have, you have in the, you know, but I don't know how you'd fix it, though. Maybe at least look at the CMOS battery, pull that, set the jumper.
Pin pulled and
you cleared it. And you cleared it. Okay. Well, there's one thing you could do, swap the CPUs. That's about the only thing you could do with that you already have the option to do. My gut says it's the logic board, but you're right. It could be a bad power CPU. The CPUs don't fail very often because they're solid state, whereas there's a lot that can fail on a logic board. It's an interesting conundrum. Let me know what you come up with. And if you want to visit our chat room, you'll get a lot of help. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I would reflash the BIOS. Don't move the good CPU to the bad PC. If the board is shot, it could also burn that CPU. It's all voodoo. Take out the RAM, take out the CPU, all the add-ons. If the motherboard is fine, it'll boot up to BIOS at minimum. No, I don't think it will boot to BIOS without a CPU. You have to have a CPU to get to BIOS. Have them pull the CPU chip, but leave the CPU fan connected. thermal paste. I don't think it would overheat that fast, would it? RMA the motherboard. Follow the prompter with a script on it. Works for Dell. sounds like a short circuit. Just take it out back and get a sledgehammer. Wave your magic wand. In other words, the chat room is just as confused as anybody. My instinct is it's the motherboard. But you do have that one last swap you could do, that CPU swap. The only reason a CPU would go is if you had a, you know, real massive overheating or, you know, flame out of some kind. Get an old priest and a young priest. I don't think it beeps without a CPU. I don't think it can do anything without a CPU. He actually really went the distance. He literally took, when he said it, he said it so casually, I thought, it can't be. He took the power supply out of the bad machine, put it in a duplicate machine, and it ran fine. So that was actually quite an elaborate. So his power supply is fine. Bad pun. I know people mustn't be listening. I don't think it's not long enough to get a post, frankly. Yeah, that's what I think. CPUs. put the bad PC CPU in. No, I don't. I wouldn't. Yes, better to put the bad machine CPU in the good machine than vice versa. You don't want to accidentally short a good CPU, right? Yeah, he sounds like he's tried all the he knows what he's doing. This is why I stopped buying building computers. Yeah, you know, it's true that you can kill the motherboard with a loose screw shorting it, for sure. And it's funny because we haven't had bad capacitors in some years, but everybody always loves the bad capacitors. It's bad capacitors! Love the bad capacitors. Yeah, you know, if it's a fairly new motherboard, it's within a year, you could probably just RMA it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sure all of you listening to that call felt very much like this song. I want to be sedated. 8888, ask Leo. It's fun, though, every once in a while. That's kind of a trip down memory lane, a call like that. We probably would get fewer and fewer of those calls. I built my own computer, and it won't boot. What's going on? And we talked about all the... It's kind of like the shade tree mechanic, you know? You can't fix your own car anymore. You need a $20,000 computer from the manufacturer. They probably won't even sell it to you. Same thing's happening with computers, really. They're more and more just sealed devices. It started with a phone and tablets, but I think it's just a matter of time before, if desktops survive, they're just sealed boxes. You know, I've been around a long time. I'm feeling like an old timer. 8888, ask Leo. Brad, San Jose, something a little more modern. Hi, Brad.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. What can I do for you?
Well, my brother forgot his Facebook password.
Yeah.
And I was helping him to try to recover it. Turns out that the email that he used for Facebook, he also forgot the password. So we couldn't get into his email to do standard Facebook recovery. So I dug deep into the bowels of Facebook recovery and did everything that I was told to do.
Don't they ask you to send a picture with a driver's license or something?
Well, I could never find any instructions on how to do that, and I wanted to call them, but I couldn't find any way to call them.
Yeah, no, you can't. There's no one home. It's not like that. It's not that kind of company. but I do think they have like an extreme account recovery system that involves sending them a picture with an ID and stuff like that.
I couldn't find anything like that.
Go to the help center. It should all be there. I'll tell you what. We'll find the link for you, and we'll put it in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Unless your brother can't find his driver's license, then he should just start a new Facebook account. I'll get the link for you, and we'll put it in the show notes. I don't have it right in front of me, but I know the chat room's going to come up with it. They have a extreme recovery system for people who, just like your brother, but probably be a good idea in future for him to use a password manager that remembers everything for him. Facebook.com/recover.php, Scooter X is saying. But it will, and will that give him the next step of if you don't have your recovery account? I'm sure there's a way. We'll find it for you. But again, I want to say everybody who's listening, who is probably saying, oh, that would never happen to me. It could happen, but the trick is to get a password vault. I use LastPass. I recommend it. 1Password is very popular. There are many others, but those are the two I would look at. Not free, but not expensive. I think $25 a year, something like that. And what you do is you put everything in this vault. This vault is encrypted, so no one can steal it. No one can look at it. It's not, you know, if nobody ever came in your house, I guess you could just put it in a notebook. But the advantage of a digital password vault is you can use it on all your devices. And when you're away from home, you can open up the vault. The key is you lock the vault with a password that's really good. And you should, you need to memorize it, not write it down. A really good password so that nobody can get into your vault. And then you store everything there. Better yet, these password managers will let you, you could generate a strong password through it that's really strong because it's hard to remember. They go hand in hand, a totally random password. And if he does that, and for instance, I do that, and all my passwords are stored there. I secure the vault. I use two factors so that nobody, even if they got the vault, could get into it. Stuff like that. Or create a new account. LastPass, they reminded me, it does have a free version, which you should probably start with. If you want to run it on mobile devices on your phone, then you need to pay for it. But yeah, start with the free version of LastPass from now on. The problem, if you don't write passwords down or you don't store them in a vault, is you're going to use the same password over and over again. No one wants to or can remember multiple passwords. Obviously, your brother can't. He's forgotten two. So they end up using the same one, and usually an easy one, like monkey123. Oh, I'm sorry. Was that your password? And if you do that, you're cruising for a bruising, as my dad used to say. Nowadays, it's so important. Use strong passwords. Dan in Fresno, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Leo.
How are you?
That's me.
Yeah. What can I do for you?
I have a question about whether I should go with an Alexa or with a Google Home for my mom.
Everybody wants to know that. Now, it's your mom, huh? Is your mom older?
She is. And
so both of them do roughly the same thing. They sit there on your counter, their little tubes, and you speak to them with the Echo. You say, hey, A word, and A-L-E-X-A. And I don't like to say it out loud because I don't want to trigger anybody's at home. And with the Google Home, you say, hey, Goog. And then they wake up, they make a little blink, and then you say stuff. I gave my mom an Echo, and she loves it. But one of the challenges is you have to kind of train the user on what stuff to say so they understand what they can do. And that's really the distinction between the two, is the kinds of things they can do. So it really depends on your mom. You can ask both of them what the weather is. You can ask both of them to set a timer or set an alarm. I use them for alarms all the time. It's really great. So does my mom. You can have a to-do list with both of them. Both of them will play music, but with different services. So obviously the Echo prefers Amazon Music. Google prefers Google Home Music. I can't remember if – I don't think they offer Spotify. So if mom likes music, you're going to pay for one of those two services for the best results. Amazon does have a free limited service that comes with an Amazon Prime account that may be enough for most people. We've given both my wife's parents and my mom both have Amazon Echoes, and they love them. The Google is a little better at facts. So if you want to know who the 16th president was, actually you can ask both of them that. But more elaborate facts, Google seems a little bit better with. Google's being very aggressive in the marketplace, but they still are only about one-third the number of devices out there compared to Amazon. Both had very big holiday seasons, and both were omnipresent at the Consumer Electronics Show. So there's a real race between Google and Amazon. Leaving both Microsoft and Apple kind of in the dust. They both have voice assistants as well. But you, like everybody else, you're asking the question everybody's asking. Should I get the Amazon or the Google device? I would say for most people, the Amazon device is the best. It's easier to shop. If she's an Amazon shopper, it's great. She can order stuff through the voice assistant, and it just arrives. Google has some shopping, but it's Target, Walmart. It's a little more confusing, a little bit more difficult to do. Amazon's natural that way. I use audiobooks on my Amazon, and that really, for me, the Echo puts it over the top because Amazon owns the audiobook company Audible, and that's where all my books are. So I think for most people, the default choice is the right choice, Amazon's Echo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This here is my tracker. Actually, let me show you the brand new tracker. It's in the box right now here. The tracker is the reason I show it to you is the world's smallest, lightest Bluetooth tracking device. It's the size of a dime, weighs next to nothing. And now I'll show you the tracker in action. I put the tracker on everything. You pair it to your smartphone and by Bluetooth, and then your smartphone's looking out for your stuff. So here's my keys, and I have a tracker on my keys because that way if I leave my keys behind, I can find them again. By the way, this is more than just my car keys. This is like my YubiKey that logs me into my accounts. This is another Bluetooth authentication device. This gets me into the office. This is a pair of keys. This is my home key. I don't want to lose these keys, so I got them on the tracker. If you spend any time at all searching for stuff you have but can't find, you got to know about the tracker. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything. They released their first tracking device, and they opened the world's eyes to this amazing technology. You'll never worry about losing your things again. Get a Tracker Pixel. They're inexpensive. They've got great battery life. You can change the battery, too, which means they don't obsolete like some of these other things after the battery wears out. The Tracker Pixel is great because it has lights all the way around it. So if you, as I often do, like attach it to your remote controls, if they fall in the cracks of the sofa and you press the button on your phone saying, where is it? It'll make a very loud sound, but it will also light up, which makes it really easy to find it under couches and beds and in sofa cushions. Your wallet, your bicycle, your luggage, your remotes, your keys. It's small enough and light enough to fit on almost anything. And the two-way separation alerts mean it saved me a lot of time, mean I'm much less likely to leave my keys behind because my phone goes, hey, you left your keys behind. And by the way, vice versa, when I leave my phone behind, my keys howl at me. And Tracker has the world's largest crowd locate network. That means everybody who's running the Tracker software is looking out for you. They don't have to do anything. But when you lose your keys and they walk by your key, you turn on the notifications in your Tracker app on the phone. Said, let me know if somebody sees my keys. And then everybody with a Tracker app who just is in the vicinity of your keys will ping your phone saying, hey, they're here. They're in Madagascar in that tree or wherever they ended up. I love the Tracker. Get a bunch of them. thetracker.com/tech guy. When you go to that special site, thetracker.com/tech guy, you get 20% off any order. So, I mean, just load up the cart and save money. thetracker.com/tech guy. They got the Tracker Pixel, the Tracker Bravo, lots of accessories and lanyards and things too. Get everything you need. thetracker.com/tech guy, and you'll get 20% off. I love my trackers. I have them everywhere. Everywhere! Including my keys. I haven't lost my keys since I got the tracker. That's kind of amazing. No. The guy running the tracker doesn't app who sees your keys. He doesn't even know. He's not involved. The app does it all, and there does no alert on his app or anything like that. So he has no idea that he's... Those of you know who have the Tracker app, you're helping all the time, but you don't know. You don't know. Because you don't... It's not... It just does it automatically. It's Bluetooth LE, so it just, as it walks by, it's like beaconing. Basically, I think it is beaconing, basically. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, security. We talk a lot about that. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can call via Skype. Website, techguylabs.com. 8888-ASK-LEO, though. That's the primary thing you need to remember. Well, you know, and the website's useful if you're listening and you want to write something down. I will often put links up there to things like how to recover your Facebook password and stuff like that. 8888-ASK-LEO. Chalking in the chat room about the Spectre and Meltdown flaw, which is still an ongoing problem. The advice is simple, though, for everybody. Run updates. You know, make sure you patch your system. If you haven't received any updates recently, run the updates program on Windows. Just hit Windows key update and type updates, and you'll get the updates program. Make sure you got everything available, all the critical patches. On Apple, go to the App Store. Under the Apple menu, go to the App Store, go to the updates section at the right there, and make sure you've got all the available updates. That should help. In both cases, you'll probably also need a firmware update. So, and Microsoft's having a lot of trouble patching Windows because the patches have been problematic for some machines with AMD microprocessors. They need the patch, but the patch breaks them. Causes blue screens at death. Doesn't break them permanently, but it still causes big problems. And if you're running a third-party antivirus, there are issues there, and they've had some blue screens of death as well. So make sure you have the latest version of your antivirus as well. Frankly, it's just another argument for not running a third-party antivirus. You've got Windows Defender if you have Windows 8 or Windows 10. You've got Microsoft's own antivirus on there, and that's sufficient. Antiviruses, the reason this is a problem, by the way, the antiviruses cause a problem is because they do something they really shouldn't be doing. They access the processor at a very low level, and Microsoft has said don't do that, and they still do that, and the fix causes a problem for programs that do that and end up, you know, crashing your system. So Microsoft has told all the antivirus vendors, look, we told you not to do this. You did it anyway. Now you really have to stop. And just to make sure, we're not going to update the computers that are running third-party antiviruses unless they update. And then they set a little registry key saying, it's up to date. Go ahead. So a lot of people, I would bet the majority of people using Windows are not getting the updates because it's being blocked right now by an antivirus incompatibility. Oy. You put these things on. This is why I don't like third-party antiviruses. They ultimately do more harm than good. They open holes into your system that shouldn't be there. We keep hearing about exploits that take advantage of antiviruses, and they only work some of the time. Yeah, they do catch viruses, but not all of them. And that's a big problem because you might say, well, I'm safe. I don't have to worry. I've got an antivirus. And no, that's not true. It's really a good idea to, if antiviruses worked, would we be seeing all these companies brought down by WannaCry? Surely they have antiviruses on their systems, right? Yeah, I think it's a bad idea. You got one from Windows Defender. It's called Microsoft Windows Defender. Just use that. Again, the really important advice for everybody who uses a computer, whether it's Windows, Macintosh, Linux, Google Chrome OS, you know, if you're using a Chromebook, yes, this applies to you too. AMD processors, Intel processors, even many ARM processors, they all need to be patched. That's why this is a serious flaw. It's not that easy to take advantage of. No one has, to our knowledge even. But it's ubiquitous. Every machine has it. And I'm sure the bad guys will be starting to use it soon. Go back to the phones. Here we go to Brian in Indio. Hello, Brian.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. What can I do for you today?
Oh, my echo's pretty much...
Oh, yeah, that radio is going to confuse you. I know, because I'm talking now in the present, but I was talking 40 seconds ago on the radio.
Developed this problem since the first of the year. It doesn't like the new year.
What doesn't like the new year?
My echo.
Your echo?
Well, what it's doing is if I listen to it for, say 30 minutes or a little longer, it'll all of a sudden shut off. And then to get it working again, I have to, say, reboot it or reset it by unplugging it and plugging it back in.
Yeah. You know, somebody called with this about the Echo Dot some time ago, and this is, I think, one of the most common problems. Which Echo do you have?
The first one.
The first one, the big black tube.
I don't know if it's black.
Yeah.
I'm blind.
Okay. Yeah, by the way, this is a great device for you, isn't it? I mean, you can talk to it, you can play music, you can listen to podcasts and the news. And there, you know, the interface is voice. So I know a lot of blind users are very happy with the Echo. But my suspicions are you got a bum unit, or the unit is worn out, which is because restarting, you know, failing like that, that's not good. You unplug it, replug it, and it works for a while, but then when you listen for about half an hour, it goes bad?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like it's maybe overheating. And I'm looking at Amazon's suggestions, and they don't really have a good suggestion for you.
I have one for Amazon.
Fix it.
Oh, no, maybe they could put a button on it. Either control, alt, delete, or a reset.
Yeah, because it's a pain to unplug it and plug it back in again. But I think you have a problem with your Echo. And actually, what I would do is call Amazon. Tell them, especially if you tell them you're blind. Now, you're out of warranty. That Echo, the original Echo, is a few years old. But I think if you, and I don't even know if you can call Amazon, but if you can leave a message, you know, go to the Amazon page where you bought that. And there's on every Amazon purchase, there's a report a problem button, and tell them, and make sure you tell them, I'm blind and I depend on this thing. I would expect that Amazon would offer you a new one, because I think that's going to be the only fix. There is a little reset. There's a little hole you can stick a reset into, but that's not necessarily the, you know, if you have a paperclip, there is a reset button at the base of the device. You can press and hold, but you need like a paper clip or something thin that you can, you know how they have the little hole there, and it might be hard for you to find, but if you can feel it, you can press and hold it and it'll reset it. But I don't think that's any different than unplugging and plugging in. Maybe it is. Maybe it does more than that. You know, maybe it actually rewrites the firmware or something. So see if you can find that little tiny hole in the bottom. Poke it with a paper clip, press and hold it. You're not going to be able to see this, but the light ring on the device will turn orange and then blue. If you can get somebody to help you do this, and they can tell you, wait for the light ring to turn off and on again. And it'll go into setup mode. And what that actually does is it sets it up from scratch. So I don't know if you remember when you got your Echo, but it sets it up from scratch. So you'll have to go in and go use the Echo app and do all that. And that's kind of a pain, frankly. That's the only solution they offer. I think you really, and they may say, well, we need to try this first, but I think they really ought to give you a new one. It sounds like it's something wrong with the hardware. You got any suggestions? 8888-ASK-LEO. Don't forget techguylabs.com, the website. That's free, by the way. There's no sign up. And by the way, there's a comment field there. You can add your suggestions. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, that pressing that paperclip in there will bring it back to the factory defaults, which might be, you know, that is certainly the thing to try before you send it back. Oh, yeah, it's very difficult to actually do anything with Meltdown. It's not true that you have to have admin access. That is not true. You have to, there's two ways you can use, you can, Meltdown needs a, I think it's Meltdown, I'm always confused the two. Meltdown needs a program running on the computer, but Spectre could, according to Apple, be triggered with JavaScript in a browser, which means a malicious website can do it. And in both cases, they don't need to be running as administrator to exfiltrate information from the kernel cache. Yeah, it is difficult to exploit, but it would be easier to exploit if you knew the target. So it's really ideal for the NSA or the CIA, because they would have some idea what they're looking for. If you did it in a mass way, the Spectre flaw, if you did it in a mass way, it'd be very difficult to figure out what to do with all that data you got. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Didn't Billy Joel write that about Christie Brinkley? I think he did. His Uptown Girl. 8888. Ask Leo the number. Erwin in the Bronx. Did they say the Bronx still, Erwin?
Yes, it is the Bronx, yes.
It's the Bronx.
I come from Brooklyn originally, but I've always said the Bronx.
Yeah, you know, so. Yeah, me too.
What do you know?
And then I've been told, yeah, though, we can't say the Ukraine. It's just Ukraine. So I was wondering if Bronx is if the Bronx has said, oh, no, it's not the Bronx. It's not the Bronx. It's Bronx. What can I do for you?
Okay. I'm looking to it's about this malware. And I'm looking, I started looking around, and it seems that there's a BIOS update.
Right.
And I have a, and I've also been looking around the web trying to find if it's easy to do, hard to do.
It's easy to do. It's totally doable. The advice on BIOS updates in general is don't rush to do a BIOS update because there is some risk and it is a little tricky. It's not your standard update. On the other hand, if there's a security flaw that this fixes, you must do it and you should do it. And this is that case. BIOS updates on Windows machines generally, now modern Windows machines generally are very simple. I have three machines that I've updated, Windows machines that I've updated for the Spectre meltdown flaw, one from Microsoft, two from Lenovo. In all three cases, I needed a BIOS update, but they, you know, nowadays they sometimes they call it a firmware update. On the Windows machine, there was no separate process at all. It just, you download the firmware update on Surface Studios and it just installs it. But it did, in fact, update the BIOS. On the Lenovo, you have to run the Lenovo updating program. It won't update in Windows Update. You'll have to run the Lenovo updating program, and then it'll do it for you. The old days of BIOS updates where, you know, you had to go through, jump through a lot of hoops, I think are mostly gone. Who makes your machine?
This is a Dell XPS 8900.
Yeah, I have a couple.
I also put something on from Dell, which identifies the machine and the operating system and all kinds of good stuff like that. And it's telling me to download two things. One is a chipset update, which I don't even understand at all. And the other one is a BIOS update. And the BIOS update is like dated about maybe 4 days ago.
Yep.
So that's how
that's fast the
got
one. Yeah, that's the one. You need both. And you should do it. It's not the only reason it's a little riskier is if you were to, in the middle of the update, turn off the machine, or if it were suddenly to lose power, then your BIOS would be in an unknown state and the machine probably wouldn't even start up. And you'd have to send it back to Dell to get that fixed.
Really?
Well, yeah. But, I mean, how old is the machine?
It's not more than 6 months old.
Yeah. Modern machines are much safer, much easier. In fact, I don't know if your Dell particularly has this, but a number of newer modern machines, even if you break the BIOS, they have BIOS restore functionality, so you don't have to send it back to the manufacturer. My suspicion is that Dell you have is probably one of those machines. So follow their the real key is follow their instructions carefully. Don't just do it, you know, don't do it after you've had a glass of wine. Don't do it if you're tired. Do it, you know, pay attention. If you go step by step and you carefully follow instructions and you don't unplug the machine, you'll be just fine. It's definitely, in this case, the only way to fully fix the problem. You have to do a BIOS and a system on a chip.
Will this circumvent any of the software that may come around? Like I've been hearing all kinds of stories as to what this thing, in other words, trying to get into a BIOS cache. This will, okay, I guess whatever it does, you know,
it'll fix it, and it will do it. Unfortunately, it will do it, but it will slow your machine down a little bit. The good news is you have a modern machine. And so it will probably be imperceptible, the slowdown. It really hurts the older machines more. So if you have a Haswell processor or earlier, generation 4 or earlier Intel chipset, you might see a slowdown. You shouldn't see a slowdown on any more modern machine. You have a Coffee Lake processor or a Kaby Lake processor in yours. Those can be fixed without too much of a slowdown.
Also, I also have a flash drive for the C drive. I'm not sure what they call them again. They're not the rotating disk.
It doesn't affect that.
Yeah. Okay.
The cache is on chip. The problem, this problem, and there'll be more. We're not done. There'll be more.
Oh.
Just as the way it is in computing nowadays. And part of it is You know, this problem's been in Intel chips since 1995. Security researchers and hackers, by extension, have gotten very good at exploiting very minor problems. In this case, they're doing a timing trick that tricks the processor. This is the cache inside the processor. It's not your swap drive. It's not your L2. It's cache inside the processor, very high-speed cache, right. And it can peek into it. And but the stuff it gets is of limited utility unless you kind of know what you're looking for. So I'm not too worried. I think a lot of people will not be patched. Most Android phones will never get patched. A lot of older computers won't. That's probably okay. However, let's not rely on probably. If you can patch it, and you can, do. And you won't see much of a slowdown. The slowdown happens when you switch back and forth between a user program like Microsoft Office and a kernel operating system program like, let's say, writing to disk or reading from disk. So your reads and writes from disks will be slower, but unless you're interleaving those all the time, you won't have a problem. You won't have a problem.
Well, other than surfing the net, the main program I use is Photoshop.
So high-end programs like Photoshop might suffer more of a problem, and I'll tell you why. And you probably know this. When you set up Photoshop, you set up a scratch disk. And Photoshop will really fill up RAM. So they save parts of what you're working on to disk, especially for some of the filters. Those will be may well be noticeably slower. Actually, I'd be very curious to see what you say. If anything it can't do in memory, anytime it's saving to disk and then reading from disk and saving to disk and reading from disk, when it's doing those fast interleaves of Photoshop and the operating system, that's when you see the performance hit. So I would not be surprised in some of your, data, while you're using it, no, but if you suddenly do a big Gaussian blur or something, you might see a slowdown there. I'd be very curious. I think a modern machine, you're probably all right. Doesn't matter how fast your hard drives are. Doesn't matter how much RAM you have. It is a totally CPU inside the processor issue.
Gotcha.
But it's worth patching. Don't be afraid of a BIOS patch. Modern machine, no big deal.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure. Yeah. I'm glad you called. And since you're a photographer, stick around. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, is coming up. In fact, we've had a photo assignment. I hope you all participated. Chris asked you all, and there's no contest here, there's no prize here, but he asked everybody to take pictures to illustrate the word or the concept try, and we got, I think we got 40, because it was the holidays, it was a little slower, but we have 40, and Chris is going to pick three that he thinks are worth talking about, where you used an interesting technique, or the photo was particularly pleasing. We'll learn a little bit about digital photography and get a brand new assignment in just a few minutes. With Chris Marquardt on the show, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, good point. If you're running virtualization software, that's another reason you might want to do this. VMware and any virtualization program, you really want to do that. Shared processors are the real risk. But, Mike, if you launch Parallels or VMware Fusion, the first thing it's going to say is, there's an update. Do it. Do it. Everybody should be doing all the updates they can right now. Chris, did you patch your Photoshop and Lightroom machines? And did you notice any performance hit?
Well, they are on the latest software, but I'm not sure. I didn't do any benchmarks, so I know that there's system calls are now slower.
Yeah.
I saw this one comparison where someone did a file creation that was like
there was a third
of the speed.
Yeah, there was a make file.
Make file system call. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the one. That was bad. Yeah. That was a big. But that's one where he was writing lots of little files. So
If you do a restore or some operations, some processes write a lot of files, especially since we have SSDs now. So
yeah, as long as you're doing that and not switching back and forth, I think you're probably. I don't know. It's an interesting issue. We'll see. I just bought that iMac Pro, and I'm hoping it's not going to be.
Oh, do you like it?
I love it. but
I've been eyeing it, but I can't.
It's
expensive. I have no justification to get one at this point.
The only for me, I got the 10 processor, 10 core, 64 gig RAM version. And the only, I mean, I don't do anything that really takes advantage of it. I got it so we could review it. But the thing I do like about it is I just keep everything running because there's so much RAM and so many processors. There's no reason to close a program. So,
that's true.
You know, I got Lightroom always running in the background. And nowadays with a new Lightroom, you want it to because it's uploading photos all the time. So.
I think even with the patches, this 5K iMac, this is the first generation 5K iMac, is still plenty fast for what I need it for. Even the odd video editing.
Yeah.
In fact,
it may be the single core performance on the most recent 5K iMac is faster than the single core performance on the iMac Pro. It's the multi-processor stuff.
The only thing I had to do is get the display changed. Because it had image retention. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's on those very high resolution LCDs. It looks like it's burning in with an OLED or something, but it's not burning in. But it kind of retains the image a bit, and then you come back and you get these ghost images on it that go away after 10 minutes. But some of these displays seem to have that problem. So
yeah,
they changed it. No problem. So. Nothing lost, just a few days. But it was definitely interesting because I thought there was something in the operating system, like working on a photo and seeing a ghost photo on top of it. Just a hint of a ghost photo.
That's terrible. That
was, yeah.
Do not want that. That's for a photographer, that's like
crazy
making.
Starting to...
I was getting worried
that I was going loopy.
I'm
going
to go get my... Somebody's asking about the camera lens mug. I'm going to go get it. I'll be right back.
Here, glass mug. No camera lens here.
Yeah, mine's a Canon L lens. I love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, joining us now. From the Viewfinder Villa in beautiful Germany, it's Chris Marquardt, the host of the Tips from the Top Floor podcast. He's a professional photographer, leads great workshops, and joins us every week to help us get better images. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Time for a photo review.
Yep. That was an assignment, the try assignment, and we're a bit overdue with that, so let's...
Well, we had a holiday or something in there, so that's okay.
There was something in the way there, yeah. Which also means only 40 people have submitted pictures, which is low, but hey, I guess people were busy with other things. So.
How dare they? Well, we'll get a new assignment. We'll give you another chance. We'll get you a new assignment, but let's start with the review.
Definitely will.
Yeah.
All right, so I've chosen three photos. The first one by Gretsch's 2000. And... I'm not going to talk about the title because that is how it came out of the software. But it's an interesting photo. I looked at it and instantly I went, wow, this is different. Now, what are we looking at? We are looking at a pane of glass with smudges on it, fingerprints on it, and the sun behind it trying to shine through. I guess that's where the try thing comes in. And the focus is on that smudgy screen, which is all lit up and you see all the details on it. And then in the background, there's a tree, there's a hill that you only see very out of focus. But it's one of these photos that is an abstract type of photo. It doesn't have a lot of
It says the sun bursting through. So I think you did pick the right interpretation.
It feels good. It's an interesting photo. It's an interesting photo because it looks at the world around us with different colors. It's also pretty monochrome. It's black and yellow.
Yeah, it's pretty. I like it.
From the sun.
Yeah. The sun bursting through. It's that's a definitely a winner shot.
I like it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Second photo is, it's a bit more clear what that is about. It's by James Aralus called T Street. The title is a young, or the description is a young surfer trying to make the most of remaining light. So what James did is he was at the beach. He shot a surfer with a long telephoto lens. It's a 600 millimeter lens. And it's a surfer in front of a sunset. So you see the sun setting in the background. You see a silhouette of that surfer. He's right on a wave. And the water splashes up and the sun shines through that. It's almost like a sheet of water in the air. And exposure is so short. Let me see. It's a 2/1000th of a second. So James captured that water, that all that motion frozen in the moment. And I like how the translucent water gets warmed up from the sunlight. And there's blue in the background because the shadows are blue and the sun is warm. And that mixture of blue and orange and the silhouette and the frozen motion just make for a very, very pleasing photo. I like that.
Nice mix of colors.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you.
And that's
James.
What you get in the evening. You get the warmth on the horizon.
Right.
And you you get the cold shadows in the front. Works really well. Now the third one, the only connection to the last one is water. Here is it's by Chris Boland, by the river in St. Ives. And it's a person, it's a black and white photo, a person at a river feeding, well, stretching out their arm with a, looks like a piece of bread in the hand, and a seagull trying to catch or trying to grab that piece of bread. And it's this, it's a story in itself, but it's not just I think it's a great photo, but it's not just a great photo. In the description, and you might like this, there's a bit of tech trivia that Chris put in there. He writes, the big building in the background is where Clive Sinclair made some of the first pocket calculators.
Oh, wow.
You remember the ZX81?
Yeah, the Sinclair, yeah.
And the Sinclair Spectrum. That's where Clive Sinclair had his factory.
In England, so that's really neat, yeah. And I do. So I really like that picture. I love how translucent the wings and the tail feathers of the seagull are. That's a very pretty picture.
Well, and it's right in the act of trying to catch that piece of bread, which is it's very clear what the subject is in this photo. It's the seagull. It's the person pointing to it is not the subject. The seagull is, and pointing to the seagull. That's what the arm does, and that helps the subject be the subject and be in this. And it's kind of in the center of the photo as well. It's in focus. Yeah. So that all works together really, really well to tell the story.
Chris made it black and white too, which I like because it shows the composition of it very clearly.
And it takes all the color distractions out. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Really nice.
Works really well.
Well, I mean, we didn't get a huge number of submissions, but we got a lot of good ones. So thank you, everybody.
Amazing stuff. It was really hard to choose. It was really hard this time to get to choose three photos. I was going back and forth between all of them. Lots of great stuff. So thanks, everyone, for submitting your photos.
All right, Chris, I'm ready. This time I'm dag nabbit, I'm going to take a picture. I'm going to submit something. By the way, everybody's asking, what camera are you using for your video? It's beautiful. You've got, it looks like portrait mode.
It's Sony 5100. It's HDMI out and very, I cobbled this together and
looks
I like
good,
it a lot.
Because the background's kind of out of focus. You're beautifully lit.
That's the look I was going for.
Yeah,
a little
looks
bit
gorgeous.
Of depth of field here.
Yeah,
it's really new pretty. Assignment
okay.
is repeat. The year is about to repeat, so we trying this as an assignment.
Repeat. Do over or something. Could be anything you want. Here's the deal. You take a picture illustrating the word, the concept, repeat. We don't say what that means. You figure that out. Take the picture. That gives you some more leeway. Tag it with the word repeat and upload it to Flickr. Flickr's the Yahoo photo sharing site. Still around, by the way, and still great, and it's free to join Flickr.com. You will also want to join on Flickr, the Tech Guy group. And you'll know you're in the right group because there's thousands, tens of thousands of members, lots of photos. Renee Silverman, our moderator, is there. She'll welcome you in. And you can get upload as many as one picture a week. We've got about 4 weeks before we do our assignment review. So get out there, take some pictures of repeat, and upload them to the Tech Guy group on Flickr. And in about a month, Chris will review it. You'll find Chris at discoverthetopfloor.com, his great Lightroom instruction, his new book coming out soon, his book on film, all sorts of stuff. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com, and we will see you next week, Chris.
See you next week.
Thanks. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yay! We even got an ad in. You are good. You're a trained professional. I can tell. Thank you so much.
Well, why? Because I was not saying anything while you were doing the ad.
No,
because
you got it all in. You like we did a whole review quickly, and then I mean that's impressive. That was very impressive. Thank you, Chris. Have a wonderful week. What do you got planned? Anything fun?
No, mostly office stuff this week.
Yeah, I cleaned my office over the break, and then we had a Leo. Okay,
there's a reason the camera's pointing this way.
Because
you should see my desk.
It's awesome. I cleaned off the desk. I cleaned off the floor. I cleaned off all the stuff. I can actually go into my office. I can walk in now. And then we had a Leo garage sale at the studio of all the old stuff that I just couldn't I couldn't get rid of.
I wish we had garage sales here in Germany. We don't do this.
What?
But it's so convenient.
You don't do garage sales in Germany?
Well, you'd bring your stuff like to a something like a Goodwill similar thing.
Yeah, we do that. Here. Yeah, we do that.
But the garage, I mean, that's one of the best American inventions is the garage.
No, we invented
we
that.
We don't do these. No.
Wow.
We don't do
these. Yeah, it's really good. Burke says it was a huge pile of stuff.
Yep.
It was a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff. And there'll be more next
eBay,
year. eBay's good. That's a garage sale.
It's more complicated than a garage sale, though.
Yeah, that's true. So if you put, you should try this. You could put up signs around the neighborhood. You say Saturday, I'm selling all my old stuff.
I know how it works, but people would just
look at you strange.
He's
really,
yeah.
What do you think that is culturally? That's not. It's just not done. I don't know.
Oh, we could discuss this at length.
I had no idea.
The differences between the German and the American culture.
Is it considered,
there are differences, trust
me. Is it rude or?
No, it's not rude. It's just very unusual.
It's just weird.
People wouldn't do this. I think for Germans, it would probably feel like going through your neighbor's trash.
It's an invasion of privacy. Yeah.
It's a bit of that, maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
But that's exactly what it is, by the way.
Let's look at Leo's underwear.
One person's trash is another person's treasure.
It's true.
That's what we say here in the States. All right. Well, thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
All right. See you again next
week. Bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to Michael Cozio for the music on the show today. He's our musical director. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for answering the phones. And thanks to you for calling. Rachel in Springfield, Illinois. Hi, Rachel.
Hey there, Leo. How are you?
I am well. You have
great
a number for our Echo user.
Absolutely, I do, and it's great to talk to you again. I'm feeling really old that the 20th anniversary of ZDTV is this year, and
isn't that amazing?
Came up. I know. I was watching it on C-band satellite.
Wow.
I came up to meet you at the Brick House about 4 years ago when I was getting a guide dog. You took me around and verbally described your studio, and it was just awesome.
I'm glad you did that.
Lots of fun.
And how's your dog? How's your pup?
She's awesome. Her name is Kiona, and she's a black lab. And since I met you, I have a little 3-year-old girl now too. So my
congratulations.
Life,
that's wonderful. Crazy. That's wonderful. And what was her name? Siona?
Kiona.
Kiona. How does Kiona get along with your daughter?
Oh, they're best buddies. You know, I think with food, they kind of have a little understanding. You know, the 3-year-old doesn't want something. Oh, I'll give it to Kiona. She'll eat it. and my daughter, Delaney, is, you know, Kiona watches out for her. So, you know, it's kind of
isn't that
fun.
Great? That's so
But
sweet.
Delaney's already becoming a tech person. She gets her iPad and she says, Mom, turn off VoiceOver.
Wow. Oh, yeah, because you turn it on so you can hear it. Yeah, nice.
I turn it on and she hates it because then she can't do everything the way she's used to. So she's a technical geek, but what can I say?
Do you use Amazon Echo yourself?
I do, yeah.
I think I've been getting calls and letters. My friend John Kalish just wrote an article about how blind users have really found the Echo incredibly useful.
I use it to call Uber.
Perfect. Great example. You know, yeah.
And I do song quiz on it. I play Jeopardy. You know, I do all the fun stuff too. And I've done a few Amazon shopping things with it, but I'm one of these people that I use everything because my job is technology. So, you know, I have to try everything out. I'm an assistive technology specialist. So, you know, I get to try everything out and teach other people how to use it. So I kind of have to be ahead of the game.
That's wonderful. So his article, by the way, if you want to read it, was for the CBC in Canada. Smart speakers make life easier for blind users.
I will check that out.
Yeah, and John says it was inspired by a blind user who called the radio show, who was singing the praises of his Echo. He was using it for phone calls and things.
You've made me want to also try the Google Home Mini. I want to try that as well.
They're both great, and the Mini's cheap. But both of them, you know, you can get a Dot for $40. I think a Mini for $30. So if you have a speaker, you just hook them up and.
I'm just trying to figure out how we can get them both to talk to each other. Wouldn't that be fun?
I know. Listen to them have a conversation. I know. It feels like they should. Truthfully, what I really want, and I hope, I realize companies are not incented to do this because they all want to own you outright. But somebody should make, and maybe it'll be Microsoft, maybe it'll be Apple, should make a kind of a meta assistant that talks to all the other assistants. So
that would be awesome.
Yeah, because I don't want to talk to all the individuals. I just want to talk to one assistant and have it hand it off to whoever's appropriate.
I like that idea.
I know.
Oh, well, okay, Amazon, the Echo handled this one better, so we'll get that response.
You wouldn't have to choose that. Yeah.
All right, let's go. Let's do this.
Let's do it. Anyway, so how can we help our I've heard other people complain that sometimes Echoes die. They have to be rebooted. I suggested that he stick a paperclip in that reset hole and start over. That might help. But if it doesn't, who should he call?
Yeah, I have a number for Amazon accessibility. And you know, the regular Amazon people might be of some assistance, but if you deal with somebody who's used to dealing with the accessibility, they're not going to tell you to look for the ring. You know,
exactly.
They might have another.
Yeah.
And that number is 1-888-283-1678.
888-283-1678. And we'll put that in the show notes so that we can
It's a little tricky to find on the website. So when I found it, I wrote it down. But I've called them for accessibility, not necessarily for the technical side, but also, you know, if you're having difficulty with products or finding products or difficulty on the website, you know, if you're having trouble doing something on the website, they'll help you out with that too. And I've had good luck with dealing with them. So hopefully that'll help your other caller.
Thank you so much, Rachel. It's nice to talk
to you. You're very welcome. Great to talk to you again. I'll definitely be up that way when I'm back getting another dog in about, I'm hoping about 10 years.
The guide dog's place is what, in San Rafael down in Marin County?
Yeah.
So they're very nearby. They're, a half an hour from our studio. So when you go there, anybody go there and get your dog and visit us or visit us and get your dog. We don't mind. We like having the canine companions.
It was so much fun being a geek and everything. It was just so much fun going up there and just a little added thing to have fun with while I was at the guide dog school. So
how fun.
You're doing an awesome job, and I recommend you to all the people I train as well. So
wonderful.
Thank you so much for all you do.
Thank you, Rachel. Have a great day. All right.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye. Bye. And Keona, cute name. All right, let's head to line 4. Nathan Tucson, how do you like your new Note 8?
I actually like it pretty well, Leo. Thank you.
It's a nice phone. I love the Note 8. I think it's one of my favorite phones of the year.
And I tell you, it's been a long time coming. I've wanted a flagship phone for forever. I just I came from the Moto G5 and it's kind of outside of town. So getting the new phone with the new service seemed smart to us.
Yeah, and I know why you don't get a flagship phone. They're very expensive. This is almost a $1,000 phone. But
yeah, the sticker shock is tremendous.
If you spread it out over the 2 or 3 years you'll own it. I mean, you had that G5 for a while, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I had it almost a year now. So
I think it's, you know, treat yourself. Why? Why not?
That's kind of the way it worked out. So it was a treat for me and my wife. Both switched. She got a V20. I don't know if you like that phone or not.
I love the V20. The LG, that's another great phone. Yeah. So both of you got treated. So here's the deal on Android 8, Oreo. Samsung is testing it right now. They've started to push it out for the S8 Plus, and they say the Note 8 is, well, it's in test right now. That could mean weeks or months. It depends on how the tests go. But you should be getting it pretty soon. I do not, however, recommend that you force the update. I would wait. You're not okay. missing anything at this point. The most important updates on any Android device are not the big number updates. That's just really mostly features. They're the security updates. And you should be getting those. The latest security update, the January update, just came out. But I don't even have it on my Google Pixel yet, so I'm still December. Do you know how to check your security updates?
Yes, sir, I do. Matter of fact, both phones were updated to the latest security badges. I want to say the V20s, actually looked like the V20 was a better patch. I think it's January, and I think my Note's still in December.
Yeah, you'll get the January soon because that's going to be the Meltdown Spectre mitigation. I don't have it yet either, though. So good. So don't feel too far behind. That's the most important thing. Those monthly security updates are pushed out by Google. Samsung's been very good. So has LG. Have been very good about applying those quickly, and that's what you want. And you'll get Oreo. Remember, they have to make it work with their TouchWiz interface and all of that stuff, so it takes a little longer. But you'll get Oreo. You should get it pretty soon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. If you are interested in tech, this is the show for you. We talk about it nonstop, obsessively, as the New York Times once said, without let up. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm proudly obsessive about technology. This is the show for it. Website techguylabs.com. And if you're really an obsessive, if you like, you can't even get enough, go to our chat room. It's filled with lots of geeks. TechGuyLabs.com. I like to think this show is for normal people by geeks, but the chat room is definitely for geeks by geeks. It's all geeks all the way down. IRC.twit.tv. Back to the phones we go, John in Savannah, Georgia. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo. It's good to talk to you. Greetings from Southeast Georgia.
Oh, I've always wanted to visit Savannah. It's my goal.
Well, come on down.
I will.
St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, is that the day?
That is the day they paint the fountains green, big parade. It's really nice. The flowers in bloom, good time to visit.
Oh, I want to see it. It's that's where the Garden of Good and Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil took place, right?
Right.
Yes. You've got those stately, old, beautiful homes. I want to go.
Well, you have to. Yeah. Well, thanks, Leo, for taking my call. I had two small questions, I think. Well, one major one. I have an old iMac, 2011. I do video editing with Final Cut Pro and also do Lightroom and Photoshop. But I feel like it's giving up the ghost, and I want to get a new iMac 27-inch.
Oh, you are in luck, my friend.
Well, how much RAM do I need? Do I need the 64 or 32?
You don't. No one needs 64 gigs of RAM ever. I bought it. I bought the new iMac Pro, which is I'm sure you're not considering because it's insanely expensive. It starts at $5,000. Now, it's aimed at people, though, who do this for a living. Do you do the video editing for a living?
No, I'm retired. It's a serious hobby.
Yeah. Well, so how serious? So that's the question. For people who are, you know, professional photographers, videographers, 3D designers, spending $5,000 to $10,000 on the tool they use day in, day out is not outrageous. But for a normal person, their personal computer, that's a lot of money.
I have about 400 videos, I think, that I'm on the computer. I have about 5 external hard drives, and then I've got thousands of photos. And
I think the good news is you don't need to get the very expensive iMac Pro. This year's, well, I guess not this year anymore, the 2017 5K iMac is excellent. And in fact, this will make you feel better. It is faster in single core. It can be faster in single core processing than the iMac Pro. The thing that makes the Pro is the processors they're using are Xeons. They're the more workstation-y processors. And they have RAM up to 128 gigabytes. That's crazy. You don't need that. I would look at the 2017 iMac, configure it as you can afford. You know, that 5K screen is really good for video editing. It's P3, which means If you're a video editor, you'll probably know that DCI-P3 is the standard color correction for video. That's if you are going to make video that other people are going to see on their screen, you want to make sure that the screen you're adjusting it on is a P3 monitor, and this is 5K means it's very high resolution. It's beautiful. They're very fast processors. It has Radeon Pro graphics if you need it and want it, and I probably would consider that if I were you. And I think 32 gigs of RAM is plenty. I don't think you need to go.
What about a hard drive? I want to do the SSD. I've heard you say not to go the Fusion.
Do I need Fusion? No. So this is one advantage of this because it has Thunderbolt 3 on the back of it. My suggestion is you don't need more than 512 gigs internally. It's up to you, but that's enough for the operating system and all your programs. That's what you want on the internal drive. And then because video editing in particular has a lot of data, you know, the original videos before you edit them and all that stuff in high quality, it can take many, many gigabytes. You'll want an external drive, an external Thunderbolt 3 drive for that. And that's fairly inexpensive. I have off my iMac Pro, I have three drives hanging off of it. Because it's Thunderbolt 3, they're just as fast as the internal drive, or almost as fast as the internal drive, certainly faster.
Now, my other drives, would they be able to still work?
Sure they would. USB works just fine.
Okay, I know then you would do a different kind of file management. I'm running Yosemite because they told me in Apple not to upgrade to Sierra or High Sierra because it'd make it run so much slower.
Well, on a 2011 Mac, yeah, but your new iMac will come with High Sierra, and that's fine. It will also come with the new file system on the internal drive, an SSD. Apple will only format SSDs with the new file system, APFS. That's good, though. SSDs work better under APFS. Your older drives, they won't even offer to upgrade them, unless you have an older external SSD drive, which you probably don't.
No, they won't.
And they'll work just as well with HFS Plus on those drives. Apple's done this quite well. It's completely transparent, and they don't upgrade any drive that can't be upgraded or shouldn't be upgraded. The only one you'll want upgraded, and it will come this way, is the internal drive.
Okay, and my second question, and I won't keep you. I have an old iPhone. In fact, it probably cut off two times. This is my third time trying to get it. And iPhone 5 and the battery. I've carried it to Apple. They had me go 2 hours in Apple Store, and they said they don't make a battery for the iPhone 5. Do you know?
They really don't want you to use the iPhone 5 because the iOS 11 update made it run like molasses, right?
I know, and it runs like molasses. I only get about an hour and a half battery life. In fact, holding for you, I was connected to the cord.
Yeah, that's a shame because they do offer this now $29 upgrade, but it's only for iPhone 6, 6S, 7. And SE, which is this looks exactly like an iPhone 5, by the way, but it has the iPhone 6 or 7 guts. I guess it's the 6S guts. Boy, that's a shame. They're really saying you might go to iFixit.com. They sell iFixit, iFixit.com.
iFixit, okay. Yeah.
They are a sponsor of some of our podcasts. We really like them. They offer repair videos, information, and parts. And they do offer battery upgrades, fairly inexpensive battery upgrades. And I believe they're still offering the iPhone 5. But do it quickly because if Apple's not making them, then you're not going to see any, you know, eventually people will run out of them.
Yeah, that's what the store told me. They had me drive 2 hours.
Where
we live in Savannah, they don't have an Apple store. Oh, so I drove up to Augusta, and they just didn't carry it, they said.
Yeah. So you do want to replace the battery. The good news is iOS 11, when it sees a new battery, will run at full speed. So it is worthwhile. And, of course, yes, this is one of the things that happens with batteries. And one of the reasons Apple says it slows down older phones is they get less and less capable of holding a charge. And that's exactly what you're experiencing. So apparently it's fairly easy to do it on the iPhone 5. I think that was one of the last iPhones to have screws. So the iFixit kit comes with a special screwdriver designed to open up the phone. They have videos. Watch the video before you order. See if you feel comfortable with it. It's not a hard thing to do at all, and I think you'll have a nice sense of satisfaction when you put it back together, and it works so much better.
Thank you so much, Leo. And do come down to Savannah sometime.
Oh, I would love to. St. Patrick's Day, huh? Maybe I'll make my way there in March.
See, you should. The azaleas are beautiful at that time.
Green fountains, and of course, what a great time of year to visit.
And probably the river will be painted, color, not painted.
Well, that sounds like fun. Hey, a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Leo.
All right, take care. Yeah, I guess you can't get to iOS 11 on the 5, not the 5S you can, I guess. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Does the iPhone 6 still have screws? They dropped them on the 7. I feel like they dropped them on the 6. They have screws? All right. Start gluing everything. Fire up the funk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Let's go to line 2. Eddie is in Lafayette, California. Hi, Eddie. Leo Laporte.
Leo, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, it's awesome. I met you back in Marin County when you were on Cron 4.
Oh, way back when. House. Yeah, we did that smart house. I remember that.
Yeah, that was wild. My boys really enjoyed that.
That was a long time ago. Well, nice to talk to you again. That's great.
Hey, two quick questions. One about running the Roku through a hotspot and not necessarily a phone hotspot.
Okay.
Any ideas? Should I use a stick or should I use a tabletop?
That doesn't matter because the Roku's just looking for anything that's Wi-Fi. And so any hotspot's going to look like Wi-Fi. It's not going to care. Of course, remember that anybody who's selling a hotspot based on cellular data is probably going to have some pretty restrictive data caps. And it's very easy if you're watching Netflix to power through those.
I think it's a business one. I'm not sure. I got to get some more info.
See if he pays extra if you go over 5 gigabytes or 10 gigabytes. The reason I say that is if you're watching high-def content on Netflix, a gigabyte an hour is pretty typical.
Right, and you'll blow up your T-Mobile or your
AT&T. 5 hours into it, and you're suddenly you've used up all your data for the month.
Yeah, I did T-Mobile for a while on my computer because AT&T knocked me down, and you could tell them metering it down.
A lot of them, and this is really a kind of a consistent source of annoyance. A lot of them say unlimited, and I guess the FCC spanked them a little bit. I don't think that'll happen anymore. But in the good old days when the FCC actually did something, they spanked them for it. But the phone company's response was, well, we're not limiting it; we're just slowing it down.
you can
get as much data as you want. It's just not going to come in very fast. And they said, well, that's still technically unlimited. And the FCC said, no. Everybody expects when you say unlimited that it's unlimited, and that includes bandwidth throttle.
Movies. Yeah. Hey, and then my other quick question is, when you go into your spam junk folders and you click on an email to block it, it has your email in there. How do you get around that to block that? Are they spoofing
you? You mean they're sending it from your email?
That's what it says. Yeah. You go to block it, and then it says Hotmail says you can't block it because it's your email.
Well, Hotmail's not too bright. That's part of the problem. Any good spam blocker is not going to do it by the return address. Because no spammer worth his salt is going to use his email address as the return address.
Right.
Spam doesn't benefit by you replying to it. Spam gets its money from you clicking the link in the spam. So they I've never seen spam that had a real return address. It's often your address. That's right. So a good anti-spam tool, apparently Hotmail is not it, a good anti-spam tool doesn't use the sender's address. It uses the contents of the email and the subject, and it kind of figures out, and it can look at other things that you don't see, things like the sending server and so forth, although even that can be spoofed. So Hotmail is notoriously bad. This is Microsoft's email program. It's notoriously bad for spam checking. Did you get upgraded to Outlook Mail, Outlook.com?
They're trying to get me to. Should I upgrade to it?
Yeah, I think it's better. It'll have better anti-spam features anyway.
Yeah, I'm
and then really the way the yeah you I mean the way you're doing it right is pressing the button saying this is spam, right?
It's going into the spam folder, but I wanted to block it. So
you can't make a filter. Yeah, you can't make a filter that blocks it by address. But putting it in the spam folder is probably what you want to do, because that's giving it, that's saying to it, look, this is spam, and it's using every bit of information from the email, not just the return address, to determine that. So that's why, okay. Yeah, you can't block that email address because it's you. You wouldn't want to, because even if it weren't right. you, it's almost certainly not the spammer. And spammers, because people try to block email addresses, rotate through the addresses. So this is how a spammer works. He goes out, he buys a million email addresses for $1.50. He sends out spam using a special program. He sends out spam. One of the things this special program does is it rotates the sending email. And usually it just picks at random an address in that million address list and just rotates mm-hmm. through it. So, yeah, those are the sender's address is useless.
Well, I appreciate your program.
Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. And the good news is, if it's getting it into the spam folder, that's it means there's enough in there. It knows it's spam. You can, in most email programs, I'm not sure if Hotmail will do it or even if Outlook will do it, but most email programs have a setting and look in the spam settings to not save spam, but just to get rid of it. You know, don't put it in the spam folder. Just get rid of it immediately. The reason usually you don't want to do that is sometimes it mistakenly identifies mail from your mom as spam or somebody else important as spam. You don't want to miss that email from your mom. So when you do have a spam folder, it's a good idea once in a while just to go through it. And if stuff shows up in there that's not spam, train your email program. Say not spam. Press, there'll be a not spam button. That's not spam. Bad email program. Not spam. And then the program, in theory anyway, learns, oh, that's not spam. Okay. You know, this is a good email spam filtering is tough to come by. Gmail does a great job. Google's mail program is an excellent job because it is a collaborative filter. So, it, you know, there's some things when you see the word Viagra 23 times in an email, usually that's spam. So there's some things they can say, yeah, that's clearly spam. But most of the time, the way Google works, the Gmail filter works, is by people marking mail as spam. So the first person who gets it says, that's spam, marks it. If they get 20 more people saying, agreeing, yeah, that's spam, that's a very strong signal. Humans are much better at recognizing spam than machines are. So by using kind of human collaborative filter, Gmail has basically done, I think, the best job of all of getting rid of spam. It's probably the best filter. You can, by the way, you can have your Hotmail go through Gmail and come back into your Hotmail using mail forwarding, and Gmail will collect mail from a Hotmail account, things like that. Pass it through Gmail, and that gets rid of a lot of the spam. I think I've gotten pretty good at spam filtering to the point where I used to pass my mail through Gmail. Gmail, in my case, kept giving me more spam only because I have a French last name, and so I was getting an awful lot of French spam, which Gmail, I guess, was fooled by. Google's of late had a bit of a spam problem. Google Plus, their social network, has been overridden by adult spam, which makes it completely useless. I don't even go there anymore. Clearly, they're ignoring G+, Google Plus. That's sad. That was their big thing, right? And even my Hangouts. Do you have this if you use Google Hangouts? Or I have a Google Fi number, but if you use a Google Voice number or Google Fi number in your Hangouts, and you have a last name that's French, I get a lot of spammers posing as young French women texting me at 4 a.m. because it's daytime in France. So I know they're I know they're probably in France. In the middle of the night, I get all these, oh, bonjour, coucou, hello, hello. And it's flattering until you realize that's probably some guy from Hungary, Bulgaria, East Germany, somewhere, sending me spam. Not Josette. Hello, Josette. No, this is not Josette. He's not. It's Igor. 8888-ASK-LEO on the internet, I tell you. It's loads of fun. Let's take a break. More of your calls to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, cuckoo. Great Stevie Wonder. He was at CES this year. My friend Robert Ballester, who also went to CES, said he's just walking down the aisles, and lo and behold, there's Stevie Wonder. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Stevie's big into technology. In fact, there's kind of a nexus between Stevie Wonder and one of the most famous artificial intelligence researchers, Ray Kurzweil. Early in Ray's career, he made synthesizers, the Kurzweil synthesizers, very well known. Stevie Wonder bought one. Ray got to know Stevie and as a result started working on voice synthesis and got into artificial intelligence. And now today he's a fellow at Google and is working on all sorts of interesting things, including longevity, life extension. So, little Stevie Wonder, tech guru. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's get back to the phones. And on the line, Kent Tustin, California. Hi, Kent.
How you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's 80 degrees here.
Oh, what? Crazy. How's the fire? How's the fire danger, though?
Yeah, well, it's all burned out already. You know?
I guess
we burned half of it already.
That's one way to eliminate it, isn't it? Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was part of the problem. They didn't let some of it burn in the past years. So.
Yeah, that's what it does naturally. But boy, that was terrible.
Yeah, and then the floods.
And the floods and the landslides in Montecito. And
no kids. Hey, listen, my question actually has to do with something that you use every day in your studio, but it doesn't work in the outside. You know, headphones and earbuds have come a long way.
I live my life in headphones, yeah.
But what you can do that we can't do on the outside is you can hear yourself when you speak.
Yeah, that's what you get used to. If you're a DJ, an announcer, a singer, a performer, in most cases, they'll mix in your audio. In fact, that's the
right.
So I hear you in my head. I'm wearing headphones now. And the reason we use headphones, of course, is so that, you know, you don't want to open speakers next to a microphone. You want to avoid feedback. So the headphones prevent that. So those of us who've worked in radio long enough, probably half deaf from listening to headphones too loud. What you're talking about is when you're on the phone, the Bluetooth.
Yep.
And there's a reason they do that. It would be extremely distracting because Bluetooth has high latency. So by the time the signal goes from the Bluetooth microphone to the phone to your caller and then back into your headset, if they were to put your voice in there, it would be delayed by about a quarter to a half a second. And you would sound like Lou Gehrig at his final speech in Yankee Stadium. You would, today.
Or like some of the original VoIP phones.
Yes, it's very confusing. So, in fact, it was Ma Bell who decided to do this originally with the phone. You don't hear your voice on your telephone either, do you? You only hear the caller's voice.
Yeah, but you have phone away so you can hear yourself talk.
Right. People have addressed that. You can do it. Let me think because I use nowadays, I use things like Apple's AirPods. I have
it's like the way I tell people to do it is to stick your fingers in your ears and speak. And that sounds like when you're speaking.
Yeah. And I think that's perhaps for historic reasons, but I think it's also an issue because of Bluetooth latency. And, speaking as somebody who's used headphones forever, we have to be very careful. If, for instance, Michael were to start sending the audio back from the studio into my headphone, I'm listening to myself locally, but if he were to send, he's sending me what we call mix minus. That's the audio of the radio show minus my voice. My voice is coming through mixed in locally. If he were to send me what he's getting as my voice, it would be delayed enough. There's no way, Michael, we can demonstrate this, is there? It's very disconcerting. And the times that that's happened, and it has happened by accident, Michael knows, my eyes will cross, steam will start coming out of my ears because I'm trying to talk and hearing myself back a second later is surprisingly difficult. So I understand you want, they call it side tone. You want side tone. And a lot of people like that. It's one of the reasons when you hear people on airplanes talking to their cell phones, they talk so loud because they can't hear themselves.
Exactly.
The worst.
I found one company called Doppler Labs that actually had built a earbud.
Yes.
And it was specifically for hearing. They didn't even have it for anything but hearing.
Yeah.
And you could be in like a coffee shop and you could have noise canceling, but you could adjust it to whatever level you wanted.
Yeah.
And then they realized that people wanted more than just that. and they've since just recently went out of business. And I sent them, I said, hey, you guys need to pair up with somebody else and get the whole package.
So there are you can Google this, and there are companies that make them. You can either Google headphones or earbuds with side tone, or sometimes they call it full duplex. So full duplex means you get both sides of the conversation instead of half the conversation. And Plantronics makes a full duplex earbud called the Backbeat Go that apparently gives you sound back. I'm just looking after doing a search. So I think that there are others besides the Doppler. The Dopplers, it's really a sad story with the Dopplers.
Right.
They were agreed to be acquired, and then the acquisition fell through, and they couldn't go on. They just ran out of money.
Yeah, they need to hook up with somebody like Braggy.
Yeah, Braggy's doing some really interesting stuff, too. So, yeah, you can search for, it's unusual, you have to look for it, but you could search for full duplex or side tone headphones or earbuds.
Okay.
Sometimes they call it direct monitoring. That's another term. That's the trick, is you, as with any Google search, knowing the term is 90% of the battle.
Right.
So I do see some. Somebody says he has an Audient, A-U-D-I-E-N-T. Are they headphones, Zero Neuro, or are they hearing aids? Direct monitoring on his device. They call it direct monitoring.
Kind of what I had been waiting for the Braggy for a long time to come to fruition, and that's what I finally tried. But it didn't do that one thing. But then I come to find out recently that they've connected with a couple of hearing aid companies.
Yes.
They're doing things for tinnitus and some other things they're coming out with.
I am very excited. Now, I wear hearing aids. I wear Starkey hearing aids. But you know why? Not my age. Years of listening to headphones too loud. And it's a vicious cycle because your hearing goes, so you turn them up louder, and then it makes your hearing get worse. And most of the people my age who have been working in radio for 30 or 40 years are pretty deaf. Same thing with musicians. Because you tend to turn up headphones. That's why one of the reasons I'm kind of hot on the subject of not letting your kids use headphones unless they have protections against turning them up too loud, because you can really it's easy to damage kids' hearings. So Audient is a USB audio device. So in other words, there are people who make them. The trick is, of course, to find one that is tunable, because if it's too loud, it might confuse you, and the latency, you want to get low latency, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. I feel like hearing aids are going to be the next big thing. You know, we've tried this with Google Glass and augmented reality, and you look like a dork wearing these glasses. But I think the future of augmented reality is not visual, but audio.
Yeah.
And I do believe that it's a shame, because I think Doppler could have been one of the leaders. Braggy is still around. They may have a chance at this, and there are other companies as well. And the hearing aid companies, particularly the technologically advanced ones like Starkey and Rezound, R-E-Z-O-U-N-D, are starting to realize there's an opportunity here. I have a pair of earbuds I just love. They're wireless Bluetooth earbuds. They're designed, they're from Jabra. Remember Jabra? They used to make, I think they may still make, Bluetooth headsets. But the Jabra Elite are for sports, you know, runners and so forth. They give you feedback, but they seal beautifully, and they tell you your heart rate, their VO2 max, because you can read all that stuff in your ear canal. So they're really getting, I think we're just on the verge of augmented reality in audio through hearing aid like devices that aren't for people who are hard of hearing. I'm very excited about that. Anyway, there's the answer. There's what you should search for. And there are people who make them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I could have done that to you, but he wouldn't have.
He wouldn't hear it. I would hear it.
Yeah, it would drive you crazy.
The people in the podcast would hear it. It's terrible when it happens. I remember I was doing early days of MSNBC. I was on with Brian Williams. And the whole time he's interviewing me, I'm getting mix, full mix, not mix minus. And when you're getting it, there's nothing you can do about it. You can't say, Brian, I'm getting mix, because that will not work. So you just have to grin and bear it. But every once in a while, you'll see people on a satellite feed or whatever, you know, they have the earpiece. And if they're not getting mix minus, if they're hearing their own voice, you can kind of see them get a little weird looking. I don't know how I appeared on that Brian Williams hit, but it was not good. It was bad for me anyway. You get good. You get when you're doing in this business, you get fairly good at tuning out other audio inputs. Audio is not for phones, but for mics and instruments. Oh, it's a USB interface. So, yeah, a lot of... Okay, so, yes, you will see that. A lot of my microphones, my USB microphones, have headphone jack. And you can hear yourself. Because when you're doing... But the reason they have a headphone jack, you don't want pass-through with a computer because the latency will kill you. But if you're listening to the headphone jack, you're listening direct. And so that makes a big difference. And same thing here. I'm getting mix out of the mixing board. So my audio is not the same as the audio I would get back from Michael. That would be challenging. Yeah, I heard that the new David Bowie doc is very good. I have to watch that last 5 years. Their Spielberg doc was fantastic. Yeah, the Zoom does it. The Zoom UAC2, I think it has its headphone jack. Yeah, it sounds like echo coming back at you. I could I could do some slapback. Probably I better not, because if I do it, I won't be able to get out of it. If I ran, let's see, twisted wave. If I ran my audio recording device, I bet you I can get pass through audio. Oh, yeah, play through when recording. All right. Let's see how that works. So I'm going to record myself now. Yeah. That's not too bad because, that's actually, this is just like echo. It's annoying, but it's not confusing. And that's slapback. But if I were to delay it more, that's when it gets confusing. This is just slapback echo. It's more like Lou Gehrig, right? Let me turn that off before I forget that I did it. And turn off playthrough. Okay.
2,130 consecutive games.
Lou Gehrig, let's see if we can get his...
Tears by the tribute.
Let's see if we get
Gehrig
his
Gehrig made his last public appearance.
For the past 2 weeks, you've been reading about a bad brag.
You hear that? That's what'll make you crazy. That's the hearing yourself back. And, of course, in a ball yard, there's enough distance between you and the speakers that it's a half second delay or whatever, and then it'll make you nuts. But it's also a signature sound for this, right?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
Yeah, Lou Gehrig, Yankee Stadium. Back to the phones. Don in Arizona. Hello, Don. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, I got an interesting question for you. I got one of those Asus routers you've been talking about.
Yep.
And got a USB port on it to hook up a hard drive.
Yep.
Can I put a USB hub and hook up more than one hard drive?
Yeah. That's why it has two connections on it.
No, it's only got one USB jack in the front.
Oh, yeah, but the drive that you're connecting to it, does it have an out? You're saying let me put a hub on it. Yeah, that'll work. So yeah, okay. That's the kind of the premise of USB. You can get up to 255 devices on the chain.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. And I got one more quick question for you. This one is
that. By the way, that may confuse the router. If the router is not expecting two different drives, it might go, I don't know what to do with this other one. But that's a limitation in the operating system, but it absolutely will see the second drive. I just don't know what it'll do with it.
Okay.
You just have to see what happens. Yeah. It won't hurt it.
I got a Vizio E700i B3 70-inch TV.
Very nice.
And I want to enable the CNC function on it, but when I do that, I got to run it through a Sony 7.1 surround sound, but when I enable it, it like takes away the 5.1 channel surround sound. It makes like stereo or something. It eliminates my center speaker. Is there a way that will that CEC work on any other?
Yeah, so CEC
besides the arc?
CEC lets you turn on like your Apple TV, and the Apple TV takes over the receiver and says, hey, over here, I'm working here. The receiver then uses CEC to tell the TV, hey, go to this other HDMI port. We're working here. And so the whole thing kind of wakes up. It sometimes even turns on the TV. The problem with it, its implementation varies so dramatically from TV to TV that sometimes you get unexpected results. It doesn't always work right. It's a weird thing, though, to say when I'm using CEC, I don't get center channel. My guess is, and you'll see this on the front of your AV receiver, with or without CEC. In fact, you might want to turn off CEC because that might be confusing it. The receiver looks at what it's getting from the source, and then right on the front of the receiver, it will say, oh, I'm getting Dolby surround, or I'm getting stereo. If it says stereo, that's why you're getting no center channel. It's not encoding it. It's not detecting the encoding properly and mishandling the audio channel. So the best diagnostic is your receiver. See what it's getting. If it's getting Dolby surround, you should have a center channel. If it's getting stereo, and I bet it is, and this has nothing to do with CEC. It just has to do with the handshake between this device and this receiver. It's not decoding it properly. Maybe it's because it doesn't handle the decoding from that device. Maybe that device is sending something that it doesn't understand. Like perhaps it doesn't understand 7.1. So that's what you got to look into. It's all about the signaling and the encoding. Let's move on to Pita in Brooklyn, New York. Pita. Hi, Peter.
How are you, my friend?
I am great.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Leo, I recently had the Netgear Orbi router, the mesh routers.
Yeah, love that.
And what's your recommendation on a switch to the Eero?
I like them both. They're different in their capabilities. The Orbi from Netgear is really not so much a mesh router as a good standard kind of router. Are you having trouble with the Eero?
Not really so much trouble, but basically what I did is I bought up the the Pro. So I put one upstairs.
Yep.
The master bedroom.
Yep.
And I have one in the living room.
Yep.
And one in the garage. And I actually bought a beacon for the living room.
So you have the main unit, and then you have three beacons instead of just two. Is that right?
No, I actually got the three Eeros, and then I bought one beacon.
Oh, I get it. Okay. Three base stations and a beacon. Okay.
Right. That's what I meant. And then what's happening to me is basically when I go into the app, if I go to look where my iPhone is connecting, for some reason it's not connecting to the closest.
To the nearest one. No, it should be. But remember, the Eero is smart. Now, sometimes too smart. Smarter than the Orbi. So one of the things Eero, and by the way, you should mention Eero is a sponsor of some of our shows. One of the things Eero and some of these other mesh routers do is decide where stuff should go. And it may have looked at your iPhone and said, well, you know, I'm using 5 gigahertz in this vicinity for the TV and something else. And I really think the iPhone's going to be just fine if we put it over there. It literally hands stuff off, puts it on different channels, puts it on different bands automatically. This can confuse some devices. Shouldn't confuse an iPhone, but it can confuse some devices. Because it'll get a lot of IoT devices, which are kind of dumber, can get confused by mesh routers because they're getting passed around. Unless you're getting bad results, I would say it's fine. Is the iPhone not working as well?
No, it's working fine. The thing is, I pay for Fios's gigabit internet system.
Yep.
And the speed I'm getting usually when I connect to the router through hardwire is I get about 940 down.
Yeah, through hardwire. But remember, Wi-Fi is going to be about half that.
Well, I don't even get half. I get maybe 100.
What are you complaining about?
No, I know.
Aw, I feel so bad for you. No, you want more. I understand you want more. That's not unusual. There's overhead. There's congestion. One of the reasons people get Eeros is because not only are you spread out, remember the farther you are, the lower the bandwidth, but also you've got other devices in there. And that's one of these reasons that these mesh routers were designed, is to handle these congested slowdown. It may just be that's the best you can get, and it's not because of the Eero putting you on the other location, that it really has more to do with its intelligent routing. Unless you're unhappy with the results you're getting, I would say trust it to do what it's doing. But, you know, hang on. I got to take a break. But hang on. We can talk a little bit more off the air. Which should I do, Michael? I forgot. Is it Simply Safe? Carbonite. Oh, I want to tell everybody about Carbonite for sure. Carbonite. You know why? Because for years I've been telling you about Carbonite for the home, for the laptop. And really, I want to tell you, Carbonite has evolved. They've come huge strides in the last few years with acquisitions and so forth. And they are now the data protection experts, and not just for home, but for business too. Businesses have different needs. They need high availability solutions that get them back up and running fast. A lot of businesses have multiple locations. How would you do it with multiple locations? Carbonite Endpoint Backup. It's for businesses with multiple locations, but their deduplication means you don't back up more than you have to. You don't tie up the connectivity, the bandwidth, more than you have to. Carbonite's the only endpoint backup solution featuring true global deduplication of encrypted data. That's because they have the patent on it. 256-bit AES encryption at rest. Every data set has its own encryption key that helps protect all your data from cyber attacks. In fact, each key is just a snippet of your file. So if a key is somehow stolen, it'll only unlock a small piece of the file. Up to 2 million endpoints in one vault, as many vaults as your organization needs. Carbonite. All I can say is they are the data protection experts. And if you're in business, you ought to go to Carbonite.com and check them out. Carbonite.com. Hey, I'm out of time. Michael Cozio, musical director. Good job. Thank you, sir, for playing the discs. Kim Schaffer, thank you for answering the phone. Thanks, all of you, for being here. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week. So, Peter, the question is, if you get closer, do you get more than 150 megabits?
When I'm in the master bedroom,
yeah,
I get about maybe 2 to 3.
You're a great ad for Eero. I've never heard of that on Wi-Fi. That's phenomenal. So you're farther away from the router. It's choosing a more distant router. That may be an error. You know, that may be. And one thing you can do with the Eero is say, you know, kind of reset, unplug everything and plug it back in again and say relearn the, because what it does is it learns your network topology. And it's doing it for a reason. It really is. It's not doing it because it's stupid. It's saying, well, it's congested here. You'd be better off on this. And it may switch too. It may move it around, you know. Eero's one of those things where you shouldn't pay too much attention to what it's doing because it's, you know, let it do its thing. What did you read online?
It was saying, like, if I shut down, let's say I put the phone in airplane mode.
Yeah.
And then I reconnect.
Right.
Sometimes then it picks up the closest one.
That's true.
But I wasn't sure if I did something wrong in the setup.
No. This is what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to do that. I see that sometimes on my Eero, but I also see it on Plumes and other devices because they're optimizing your network. And that includes thinking about all the devices, not just that iPhone. It's one of the reasons the Orbi isn't as sophisticated. The Orbi won't do that. So the Orbi is the best for single device throughput. That's why you would use the Orbi. You want the ultimate speed, but it is not as good at optimizing a complex network.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. I noticed once I did connect the Eero's that I got total Wi-Fi connectivity throughout the whole house.
Even stuff that was too, like you couldn't watch Netflix on this device and stuff, all of that should be smoothed out. And really, the problem with it is you shouldn't really, they give you too much information. But I'm glad they do because I want that information. But, you know, letting you know what device is using what what beacon is kind of, you know, that's just, it makes people nervous. But if you're getting 150 down, you're fine.
Gotcha. Okay. I just thought maybe should be connecting when I'm in the living room to the living.
Yeah, in theory, if there were nothing, I'll tell you what, if you unplugged everything else, it would.
Right.
At least that's the idea. That's the idea. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great, as always, to talk to you, Peter. Have a good one.
Thank you, buddy.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.